Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns, and this is my little podcast for outdoor people, mainly focusing on the Highlands of Scotland. My guest today is an author. He's written a book about one of the Scottish islands, which I think is a really, I suppose, an emblematic island in a way. One of the fascinating things about the islands surrounding the coast of Scotland is that they have incredibly different characters. They've almost got all like different personalities. You know, you've got Orkney and Shetland in the north. You've got Arran down the south. Very different places. But one of the most fascinating islands, I think, is the Isle of Mull. And my author today has written a book, Wild Mull. And it's entitled A Natural History of the Island and Its People. And I've got to be honest, when I read A Natural History, I thought, well, this is going to be dry. But actually, it's not. It's a beautifully illustrated book. And for me, it really brings the island alive. Its people, its wildlife, its rugged terrain. It's a fascinating book and a great companion. And I've got Steve Littlewood here to talk about his book and maybe tell us a bit more about Mull itself. Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. That's a very kind introduction.
Well, it's very true. I must admit, when I just read the title, I thought this is going to be dry, full of statistics, but it's absolutely not. Beautifully illustrated with some fantastic photographs of both the island and the wildlife. Quite incredible, really. Makes me want to go to Mull again. tell us about Mull.
I was just going to say that Mull lends itself to beautiful photography, I guess. What about Mull? If you don't know the Hebrides, many people have an idea of the Hebrides as just this sort of windswept, remote, weather-strewn archipelago, if you like, and in many respects they're not far wrong.
Yeah.
You're quite right to say that they're all different. All the islands are very, very different from each other in many respects. And Mull is interesting partly because it's one of the bigger islands. And in being bigger, having a bigger geography, there's more there to explore than there is on quite a lot of the other smaller islands. And the diversity of environment, the diversity of ecology is a very significant part of it. I think if you were to come to the island for the first time, you'd be struck by the fact that it has something which first attracted me. It has a certain rawness to it. It's high, it's rocky, it's many places boggy, its landscapes can be huge in places. So in that respect, it can have quite a forceful impact on people that come across from the mainland for the first time. But it's also got communities scattered around. It's a place that's lived in. It's not just something that's complete. I've never called Mull a wilderness, and it isn't that. It has wildness, but it's not a wilderness. And it's got a living, breathing, working, playing community there as well. So I think, to sum it up, I think you could say that it's the diversity of Mull, which I think is possibly the most interesting part of it.
Yes, it always strikes me when the times that I've been there as it's a very green island. I don't know if that makes sense. Whereas some islands you go to are more rugged. I suppose Skye and places like that dominated by the cooling. But you've got, as you say, you've got a tremendous range of habitat there. You've got you've got Ben Moore, is it? I think I'm right in saying. And right. Then, am I? Yes, am I right in saying it is Ben Moore, isn't it?
You're quite right, yes.
Oh, that makes a change.
that's our Munro.
Right. Oh, you've got to have a Monroe, haven't you? And but also you've got I mean the coastline. I don't know how long the coastline. You probably do know how long the coastline is. Well, how long is it roughly the coastline?
Let's call it 300 odd.
300 miles. Yeah. And it, yeah. I think one of the things that struck me about it is the sheer scale of the place as well, because it's if you catch the wee ferry across from Loch Allyn, and you drive to the tip there near Iona, that's the best part of an hour's drive. So it's a big place.
Yeah. There's a lot of traveling to be done if you go from one end to the other, or one side to the other.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that struck me about Iona, though, is Iona and Mull itself, is that nowadays we kind of think of it as being in some ways on the periphery, but I suppose, you know, several hundred years ago when folk traveled mainly up the coast of Scotland by sea, it that wasn't the case at all. Is that right?
Yeah, I think there's been quite an interesting kind of discourse built up recently about the way that we've tend to view places today and the way they were viewed in history, and these islands were actually very central to society going back hundreds or even thousands of years, essentially because sea travel was the way to go. Of course, historically you didn't travel through the hinterland, you went by sea, and Mull would have been a very busy place for people taking sea passage back in the day.
Yes, I'm sure it would. I mean, it's still spectacular from that point of view. And tell us that also the cover of your book shows that probably most iconic of birds, the sea eagle, the white-tailed eagle, which I've been privileged to see on quite a few occasions. But they never cease to inspire awe in me. But they're a very significant bird for the island. Is that right?
That they are. I have to say that the eagle is there because it tends to be an identifier for Mull. There's lots of other images we could have put on the cover, but I think the sense was that this evoked Mull's wildness as much as any species. And it's significant in large part because when it was reintroduced to Scotland, having been exterminated, of course, back in the day.
Yeah.
When it was reintroduced, it wasn't actually reintroduced to Mull, but it chose to come to Mull, and it chose to breed in the first place on Mull. And so Mull sort of had a liftoff, if you like, in terms of wildlife exploration. At that point and since, because the population of the white tail has built up hugely since that time, and they're now relatively easy to see, and people travel here a lot to see the white tail amongst other wildlife, of course. So it's become significant, and to some extent it's become iconic.
Yeah, it's certainly the movie star of the wildlife, really, isn't it? I suppose.
I think I refer to it in the book as one of Mull's celebrities, and I think that's part of the way. Yeah.
Well, that's certainly true. I mean, one of the issues I understand that I did read somewhere the importance of the economy of Mull. Is it something like £5 million a year, or is that, I got that completely wrong?
No, there was a study done some years ago now, and it was done for the RSPB, looking at what the contribution of the sea eagles might be to Mull's economy, and that came up with this figure of £5 million, and I think you could probably put it a fair bit higher than that now.
Right. Right. And that's mainly just in the people that it attracts. And because am I right in thinking you can get boat trips out to see the eagles actually taking fish out of the sea and things like that? That's right, isn't it?
Yes, you can. One of the attractions of people coming to Mull is that you can actually get close up photographs of a huge wild predator. And people enjoy that, and yes, they do. They flock to the boat trips to take photographs, or simply just to watch them. And it's a well understood route into quick access, if you like, to one of our most significant predators in Scotland.
Yeah, I think if you're interested in watching wildlife and getting up close to wildlife sometimes and photographing wildlife, then Mull is a great place to come to that. Last about a year or so, might even be 2 years ago now, when I started to write my book Wild Winter, I went out in Sea Survey, one of the boats anyway that sails out of Tobol. Sorry, say again.
Quick plug, yes, that would be Sea Life Surveys.
Sea Life Surveys, that's it. That was a great little trip, and they took me out on this boat. And I'm a landlubber, you know. I don't take kindly to being thrown about in boats, but I sort of got the hang of it in the end. And we hoped to see whales, there were whales there. Lots of people saw them, but every time I looked one way, the whales came up on the other side, you know, so I never actually saw any whales.
That's what they do.
But I did see on that little trip, which was quite incredible. The first time I got close was dolphin. You know, obviously they, as you know, they sort of surf the bow wave of the boat. And what I didn't realize was you can actually hear them clicking and communicating with each other. And that alone, to be honest, was well worth it. Quite incredible. Now, if I'm right, there's a, I'm trying to remember the name of it now. There's a nature reserve near Iona, actually on the tip of the peninsula there, which I went to, where I think I received more tick bites than I've ever received in my life. Yeah, do you know where I'm talking about?
Well, we certainly don't talk about the tick bites. So. yeah, I think you're talking about Tararegan.
That's it. That's
which
it.
It's not a reserve as such, but it's been reserved in the sense that the owners basically they fenced it off and removed the deer and the sheep.
Right, right.
To allow the rest of the flora and fauna to recover. And
right.
That was something like 20 odd years ago now. And it's a magnificent place. It really is. And
yeah,
the woodland is so dense that now you can't even get to some of the places you could do previously because the woodland is just so deep.
Sorry, you go on, Steve. What are you saying?
Well, I was just going to say that woodland's become so deep now that it's difficult to penetrate, and as a consequence, the Celtic rainforest, as we call it, has flourished like nowhere else on Mull, I think.
I can certainly vouch for that. Yeah, it's almost impenetrable. You made a fascinating point there, though, I think. In that there is a rainforest, and if you get into those incredibly densely wooded areas, they sort of hold the moisture, and they're kind of places where it feels as though it's either raining or it's on the point of raining pretty much all the time, and yet it's an incredible little environment.
It's an environment which is really being rediscovered by people, I think, it's a very good example of why I came to write the book in the first place. Because although we've touched already on the iconic white-tailed eagle,
mm-hmm.
actually, when you widen your scope and you look at the wider biodiversity of Mull, the Celtic rainforest, the hazel woodlands and oak woodlands, are very ancient environments, and the flora and fauna that they hold is just quite extraordinary. And it's very underrated. It's been very underrated traditionally, but it's actually more scarce and probably as diverse as the rainforests that the tropical rainforests that we tend to be more familiar with. So it's a hugely important environment and a truly fascinating one. And as I say, part of the reason for writing the book, I suppose, was to try to encourage people to engage with those aspects of biodiversity, not just the big, what I've called these celebrity pieces. Well, so, I think you discovered one of Moll's gems when you went to Tureragen.
Yeah, it's got, how can I put it? It's got, like you say, it's actually quite difficult to make your way through down to the beach there, and it's, which is a beautiful secluded beach, and you know, I thought I'd gone the wrong way. It was so wild, and I thought this really can't be it. But you're making your way across little planks, across bogs, and the insect life there, quite incredible. Of course, the insect life is the sort of driving force of all wildlife in a way, I suppose. I mean, obviously, you now live on Moll, so you've got you've really seriously invested in the place. What would you most like to see developed? Are there areas that you think that could be developed in terms of habitat for wildlife or projects that you'd like to see take off in the island?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of change happening at the moment on Moll. In part, that's built development, which tends to be not so noticeable. It happens incrementally, I suppose. Mm-hmm, but in terms of the natural history of the island, in terms of the wildlife and the flora and fauna, there's a huge amount of there's a lot of afforestation has occurred on Moll, where the conifer plantations have gone up, and a lot of those are now at a point where they're being harvested significantly.
Right, okay.
And in their place, an awful lot of new forestry is being put up, a lot of which is native broadleaf species.
Right, okay.
So there's a huge amount of replanting of broadleaf woodland going up or going in.
Right.
Which on the face of it, is great, and it's something that people are crying out for generally around the UK at the moment. But I would just urge a pause just to think before we just do this and give everybody carte blanche to do this everywhere, because there is an issue about horses for courses, and no two places are the same place. And so the solution to the problems with the environment aren't the same solutions everywhere you go. I would just like to see a little bit more. I am a retired academic, and I was a research fellow, so I would like to see a little bit more research going in to some of this, these changes to the landscape. I'd like to see a little bit more research going in before taking action, I suppose. And I understand that people are keen to see change, and they feel that there's an imperative to do it quickly. Whilst at the same time, I would just urge care, because every time you change the environment, you change the homes of the species that are currently there.
Yes, it's a very we're touching on a very complex subject in that one of the problems, I think, for the Highlands generally is that there is a lot of change going on, as you say, but not a lot of coordination, really. So there's no, it tends to be very much depend on local interests, who's got money, who's got drive for it. A lot of the stuff that's going on is great, but I don't know how, I don't know if there's an overall strategy. Does that make any sense to you?
It absolutely does. I couldn't have put it better. And I think that we need to, first of all, have a strategic approach and then be able to drill down within that into the specifics of local places and local need. And I think that we have to recognise that something on places like Mull, which do have this sort of iconic status for wildlife, there must be something working there already. And if it's working, I think you should take great care before uh-huh. you run into changes on it.
Yes.
Sorry, go on.
Yes, no, that's right. I agree with you. One of the things that's happening is also that I think that perhaps people tend to forget about is that there is also not only is the island a great environment, but also surrounding it, the seas surrounding them, the marine environment is or should be something very special. But that's quite heavily under threat a lot of the time. Is that right? That's the impression I get.
Yeah, and I think the problem with sustaining the ecosystems of the seas is that we don't fully understand them. The public can't see what's happening there. They can see much more clearly what's happening on land, of course, and yes. they understand some of the changes that are occurring at the moment. We've seen all this played out, haven't we, in COP26 at the moment. Nearly all the talk so far has been about land influences, but actually the marine environment is probably more important in terms of climate change and species diversity.
Yeah,
probably more important than the land, but it's the least understood, I think. That's the problem.
That's right. I mean, I think there's issues like it's scallop dredging and things like that, where the seabed is effectively damaged and takes years and years to recover. I think it's a general, I suppose, misconception that the sea is a great big place and you can pretty much do what you want and it makes no difference. That's definitely not true.
No, it's not. We do see these impacts on Mull. Mull is better served than most, I have to say, but we do see these impacts around the coast of Mull. And of course, we don't always know. If you mentioned the impact of dredging, when you get changes, the changes have all sorts of knock-on effects. So if you lose seagrass or merle beds and such like, you're losing not only the species there, but you're losing important breeding environments for different shellfish and so on and so forth. So as with all biodiversity and ecosystems, I suppose it's an immensely complex problem. One that Mull isn't immune from, of course it's not, and we have had some high profile issues raised as a result of research that's been done around Mull. The one that I dwelt on to a little extent in the book was to do with toxic chemicals and their impact on the orcas around Mull.
Right, tell us a bit more about that. That's not something I picked up on, I must admit.
Well, it's not commonly known that there are orcas or killer whales around Mull. Not exclusively, they travel a lot, of course, but they come regularly through the seas of Mull. And it's been largely one single pod over time.
Right.
A reasonably sizable pod some years ago and has been significantly in decline since, and it's probably down to two whales now. And one of the pod died and was washed up, and they managed to to do an autopsy on it, and it was found to have massive quantities of PCBs in its system. And PCBs, of course, don't just affect the lifespan, they also affect the breeding capability. And it would explain why this pod has been dying out, because it never produced any young.
What are PCBs, sorry?
These are the sorts of chemicals. They're banned now, but they're chemicals which derive from land use. But they're flushed into
the sea. Okay.
And of course, the top predators are the species that take the heaviest load of these.
Yeah, that's where it all ends up in the top predator, doesn't it? Yeah, that's right. We could talk endlessly about mol, I think, and not even scrape the surface, as you can with so many places. You know, it's got a long history, and it's got a fascinating diversity, and it's faced with challenges just like everywhere else is, really. Nowhere is immune. But what was it inspired you to write this book about mol and its people and its wildlife? What was the driver for you?
I think part of the reason is to do with my preoccupation with the notion that as a species, we tend not to join up all the dots when we think about our environment, basically. And I've mentioned earlier COP26, but that's shown that we live in a hugely complex world.
Mm.
But we tend to interpret things in sound bites, and we tend to interpret things very superficially, I suppose. And I always feel that the much bigger and more important story is ignored, and there's a lot of fine detail to be understood beneath those headlines, if you like. So one of the things that struck me was that when people come to mol for the wildlife, they tend to come primarily for the sight of an eagle or the sight mm-hmm. of an otter or a dolphin, just to see that and to experience that animal just as it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. I applaud that. But those animals live in a context. And I wanted to put a message out there, if you like, that these celebrity species, I keep using this expression, but they don't exist in isolation. They're only there because they're underpinned by this complex but an immensely exciting web of flora and fauna, which on mol, they're hugely important, and many of them very, very exciting in their own right. The woodlands, the lichens, the fungi, the insects, the butterflies, all of these, they join up to make something of a whole, if you like. And that's the story that I wanted to put across to people, to encourage them, if you like, to discover the wider biodiversity of places like mol, and to be able to understand that the small stuff is just as exciting and as important as the big stuff that they tend to be drawn towards in the first place.
Yes.
I hope that sort of kind of sums up a lot of what the book is about. It dwells, of course, on the big exciting stuff, but it also tries, I hope, to tell a story of a much wider biodiversity that's really, really important that we understand and sustain in the future.
Oh, well, I think your book has done that. If that's what you set out to do, then I think you can rest assured. I think you have achieved that. I think what struck me, as I said already at the outset. I think one of the when I first read the title, I thought, oh, this is going to be dry, and it's not. And what you've done, well, I think what you've done also, it's not full of great screeds of text. It's full of fantastic photographs, and also you've broken issues down and made it accessible. And I think that's quite a challenge because. You know, as you say, you're dealing with some very complex issues, and they're not easy to understand. They're not easy to break down. No. But we have to, okay, you can draw people to a place by the celebrity wildlife, the otters and the white-tailed eagles. But you, the trick, and I think you've done that in this book, is to pull people's attention onto the wider issues and the importance of insect life and the plankton in the sea and the health of the marine environment, because they're all linked. So I think that's, if that's what you set out to do, you've achieved it.
Well, that's very kind. I think that Moll tells a wonderful story. And if anybody wants to read the book from page one to page whatever at the end as a story, I hope they'll be drawn to do that. But at the same time, if they want to just dip in and out of it in the areas that interest them, I think it's available to do that as well. I hope it is.
It is. That's what I liked about it. I think you can be put off by the thought of having to read a huge book, but actually you could dip into this book and see great images and also learn a lot of important bits of pieces about not just about mold, but about the environment generally. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much for talking to me, Steve. It's really fascinating having our little chat, and I know you live on the Isle of Mull, so I hope you go on enjoying the environment that you are obviously fascinated by. It's been great talking to you, and I wish you every success with the book in the future. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you, John. It's really nice to talk to you, and you'd be very welcome to come back anytime you feel like it.
I may well do that. You may regret those words.
Thank you. Put me up if you come.
I will. Thanks very much then, Steve. Bye.
Cheers, John. Bye.